can just dive right into Q&A. Should we give the brief skim?
Let's do the intro like we're doing the podcast.
All right. Yeah.
And then we always start off with Brad laughing.
Yes, that was easy. All right, so just as brief introductions, my name is Dave Kellett. I'm from Los Angeles. I do a comic strip called Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com. It's sort of a all-ages sort of family strip, very much in the newspaper style. Actually, most of us are in the newspaper style, which is worth talking about at some point in the panel. And next to me, Scott Kurtz of PvP, pvponline.com. 10 years of PvP, by the way.
As impressive as I thought, right? Because, like, you're almost 10 years. Penny Arcade guys are almost 10 years. Yeah, Brad, how long have you been doing it?
8 years.
See, it's not that big a deal.
Okay, well, so least applause-worthy, Chris Stroud next to him.
No, just kidding. 2 years?
2 years of
Cal. Whatever.
You're like, no, just kidding. Actually, second least applause-worthy.
You're not helping anybody.
No, Chris Stroud of Starslip Crisis or Starslip.com, the easier one. Also of Chainsaw Suit. Latterly of Checkerboard Nightmare, and 10,000 other projects.
A lot of attempts, clearly a lot of tries.
And then bring up the end of the table there, our dear friend Brad Geiger of evil-comic.com, Evil Inc. Also Fables.com.
Eisner nominated.
And best hugger on the panel, so if anybody needs a hug after Brad Geiger.
Is that true, Brad?
They're lingering.
They're lingering.
They go a little too long.
After the panel, Brad just walking around going,
just warming up.
Want a hug. Ready to hug.
Ready to hug. Didn't know I was doing it. All right, so one of us started one last show of hands. Who has never heard of or thought of or seen a webcomic, as far as they know? Anybody completely unfamiliar with
Yeah, who thought you were here for an Iron Man panel or something?
Let's
do a brief overview of the webcomics business model. That seems to be the thing that really...
Really?
Let me get my graph.
Okay, so as you all know... Because we'll probably dive into the business model because, for the most part, web comics are just comics on the web. So everything you ever learn from a Scott McCloud book, from an Eisner book, from any other how-to book from Randy Glasbergen, as far as drawing, as far as panel creation, as far as the art of sequential art, all of that is transposed, for the most part, into web comics. So we find it most helpful to say, go towards existing sources for that, and we'll help guide you through the next stages. So, shall we, Brad, you want to start talking through the business model, Chris?
Yeah, the thing that makes the webcomics business model unique is that it's kind of based on what's being called the gift economy. In other words, what really flummoxes a lot of people is that we're, quote-unquote, giving it away for free. Our sites are free. There's no subscription to see any one of our comics. It updates every day, and it's completely free to come visit. We're making our money out of two main revenue streams and then as many additional as we can. Number one, we use ads and sponsorships on our sites. So that brings in a certain amount of money. Any one of our sites, you'll see a good number of ads across the top, down the side, on the bottom. Primary real estate is given to the comic, and then secondary, immediately after that, is given to ads, and then things that bring people in, such as the blog. Secondary is books and other merchandise. We all sell books. We are all self-publishing now, and that is where I think we all probably make the largest chunk of our money, and that is through books and merchandise. And then after that, it's my way of talking about it is draw it once and try to get paid for it as many times after that as you can.
So repackage.
Any other ways you can repackage that strip becomes a way to create additional income, such as Scott's PvP is collected monthly in a comic book that's offered through Image Comics.
That's not original content every month?
No.
Okay.
And then I take that content, repackage it in trades. And then I take those trades and I package them into monster trades.
Cosmology.
Yes. And I take all my 10-year trades and I package them into my coffin.
And I build a coffin out of them. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That was a good Brad, it's really funny because there's been all this debate lately raging online about print versus the web, and everything you described just now is very traditional means of making money at comics. I mean, the web is really just a medium of delivery and community building.
Mm-hmm. I actually jumped into one of those forums and I said it's not print versus the web, it's print and the web. If you want to actually succeed, you are a cartoonist. You do a comic strip, or you're a comic book person, and you're trying. What you're actually using the web for, and this is something that Dave is fantastic at, is community building. It's the most important concept to get through your head in doing a website. You're using that actually to build your community, to make those people feel like they're part of something, so that when you do offer a book, it becomes a natural extension for them to buy your book.
Right. And in fact, one thing that's worth maybe clarifying is like Brad said, it's not print versus web, but I think what it is a print mindset versus a web mindset. And the traditional mindset, as I see it anyway, was that if I get to a syndicate, the syndicate will do the work for me. If I get to Marvel, Marvel will do the work for me. If I get to Scholastic Publishing, Scholastic Publishing will do the work for me. Whereas, and this has always been the case, no one will ever care about your comics career as much as you do. Your publisher won't, your syndicate won't, your marketing team won't, your distributor won't. Where the web really drives that home is that your actions have concrete results on your career, both in the marketing and the outreach, in the print, in the profit making, all that sort of stuff. So that's where I think the difference is the print mindset versus the web mindset. And the web mindset's much more entrepreneurial, much more hands-on, much more taking on a responsibility as the artist wearing many hats, and the artist as business person, and as the artist as their own business manager.
So. And there's an excitement, there's a spark to it, because even here at the show, I've run into a couple people, ran into another guy named Scott this weekend, and he left a note on my table to come visit him, and he was telling me how my work had inspired him. Well, he had these little plastic sleeves that had a little on the back, so you could set them up like frames, and he had pre-made sketches and put them, and he was selling a sketch in a frame. And I just thought that was a fantastic idea. And there's such a difference, because I have my feet kind of in two different camps. I do the stuff myself, but I also do a strip where I'm being paid by another website to do it, so they kind of run the show. All I do is, it's a paying gig. I draw the strip and they pay me for the strip. But like, I get emails like, Scott, from fans, we want an RSS feed of that. Well, I'm not even in control of that.
Oh, yeah? Really?
No. Like,
this is the
James
script that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it's not my RSS feed to deal with. So
on your site?
No, it's on their site.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So like when you're running the ship, there's I think there's a potential for kind of a capturing of ideas and then immediate implementation of them.
Yeah.
And that you don't get when you're partnered with a larger corporation.
And this is one thing that I hear bandied about, and it really kind of gets my ire up, and I want to say it so you guys can hear it, and that is, don't let anyone tell you that artists and cartoonists can't be good business people. And you hear that a lot. Oh, well, he's a touchy artist. She's a sensitive artist. You can't trust them to make good business moves. That what Dave says over and over, and it bears repeating, nobody cares as much about your comic as you do. And when you care that much, you can't help but be a good business person, because you are making decisions that you know are going to make this thing much more successful.
But are you making those decisions right, though? Because you've seen a lot of examples where a cartoonist, somebody shows up and says, hey, I'm going to give you 3% and we'll, use your content elsewhere. And they go, oh, this is the big time. I made it. And they think that's a good decision.
You're right. You do have to be smart. But my point is, it is not beyond you to be able to pick up the savvy to make the right decision on that.
No,
don't let anyone tell you that a cartoonist can't be a good business person.
Mm-hmm. And the trick, too, is that because you care so much about it, you will learn. And going into it as you build and develop and grow your webcomic business, that you will make mistakes. So the trick is to making manageable-sized mistakes and controllable mistakes. Don't sign a 5-year contract with some stupid telephone distributor, We had Chris and I sat down for a lunch meeting one time with some guy from Sprint or somebody.
I don't remember.
What was this?
He's from a company that does not exist anymore.
And Chris and I show up in like sweats, and the guy is, in a 3-piece suit, and he's like, "Oh, Sprint is going to make this happen for you kids. This is the big time for you." And what was his offer? It was like, you get 0.5%.
I think it was like 10 cents on the dollar, and we didn't. We would be the traffic drivers for their site.
And I don't think we ever saw the numbers. They wouldn't allow us to see the Sprint proprietary.
No, they didn't.
Where it went and who it went to.
Right.
So.
Did he leave the meeting in a puff of smoke? Well, I've got a 315.
No, a gate just opened up and he descended.
And he made us pay for the latte.
I think when you tell people they're going to have to be good businessmen or women, they get scared real easy. And let me tell you, a little common sense, and then a lot of asking questions. Like, you can't be afraid to ask questions. Ask other cartoonists. Ask, I mean, I know this is going to sound kind of cheesy, you know, it's like, find a teacher or an adult.
Ask your
But ask your, you know, you can, I mean, I ask my dad for advice all the time. I ask, you know, you always, there's a 6 degrees of separation maybe to somebody
for
who knows.
People in your life.
Yeah. There's people in the know that you can track down. You can look it up online. But if you just sit and say, oh, I don't know how to figure this out. I can't figure out a contract. Then you're just going to sign it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, but how long did it take your dad to acknowledge that this could be a career? You know?
Well, that's not
the
point.
To ask?
It only took 30 seconds for my dad to acknowledge that he was a superior intellect on any question I had for him. He was offering that advice when I didn't even want it.
Son, you need to quit. Quit yesterday.
So that's the basic business model. It's an ad-subsidized, not ad-supported, but an ad-subsidized free distribution of content that then trades on a growing audience base through fan sales of merch, whether it be original art, books, t-shirts, stickers, buttons, hugs, in Brad's case. And there are other options too. As we talked about in the book, there are subscriptions for additional content. There's add-ons, but that's the core business model.
So far, we should say so far.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's constant experimentation. You know, Yahoo and Google and every other company, every 18 months probably implements a new monetizing strategy for this or that.
Yeah.
And so when even the big boys are moving in different directions to try things out, smaller artists should be.
But they'll move slower than you can, is the thing.
Yeah.
Except they have a lot of money.
Anyway, do you guys want to open it up to questions? Or
yeah,
should we
I mean, if there are any.
I have a feeling there would be more interesting and pressing and fun questions than we would come up with.
Now, is that microphone in the middle of the room turned on?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh.
If you've got a question, stand. Everybody, everybody.
So, if you have a question,
sure, jump
go
on
to the mic.
There you go.
Oh, oh.
Get yeah, make on. A line. You should make a line. That's what you guys should
do. What talk show was that on where they'd have people line up at the mic? Do you guys remember that?
Jerry?
Was it? No, he just wanted to.
Jerry Springer?
There'll be chairs thrown.
Was it Jerry Springer?
Sorry, go ahead. We're talking about the...
It's Jerry Springer.
No problem. I just had a question about your advertising. Did you actually go out and run for it, or did they come to you?
There are a number of ways you can run advertising on your site. Two of the main ones right now, Google's AdSense is one. That you can, it's just almost a plug and play system. You put the code right on your site. Another one that's very popular right now is Project Wonderful at projectwonderful.com. And that is a system by which people bid for the ads on your site. So the more popular your site is, the more people bidding for that ad space, the higher the amount of money you make for that ad.
That one's kind of incestuous, I think, Project Wonderful.
Yeah, and
that's true.
A third one that I'd recommend too, it's a varying quality from day to day, but AdStack, ADSDAQ.com, AdStack.com, is kind of distributing bigger ad buys into smaller sites. So you may end up with a Washington Mutual or a Coke ad or a Chevy ad. So it's a much higher quality ad on small sites. If you have a webcomic that's very niche, one thing we don't talk about, I think, in the book, but it's worth mentioning, is some of the best money that you can make is in demographics, whether that be psychographics or demographics. Like, for example, Penny Arcade can sell ads to anybody and everybody that loves video games. So the psychographics of anybody from 18 to 85, there will be big ad buys that know if they want to reach a video game playing public online, they go to Penny Arcade. Other comics that I've seen that happen with are Unshelved, which is a big book and library thing. So anybody that's in library distribution or books, they always buy ads from Unshelved. PhD always gets the grad school market. So if you have a webcomic that really specifically targets either a demographic or a psychographic audience, you can sell very specifically to a certain niche.
When I started with ads, what I did is I approached a couple people with just some friendly emails. And I offered a sponsorship as opposed to... Because a lot of your plug-and-play advertising is based on a CPM basis, which is, I think, cost per milli, right?
Yeah.
Cost per thousand.
Mm-hmm.
So for every 1,000 page impressions, they give you a set amount of money, like 16 cents for 1,000 page impressions, or whatever runs. But what you can do is you can approach somebody, you know, build relationships. So let's say you know a person who has a product that you think your readers would respond well to. you talk to them and you say, you know, for $500 to $1,500, depending on how well you think it'll do, why don't I sell you a sponsorship to the site? I'll talk you up on the blog every Monday for the month. We'll put up some ads. We'll try to get some good response.
You should probably be able to tell them what your audience size is.
Yeah. And sign up for Google Analytics, which is free, because it'll give you good site metrics. But you can write friendly emails like that and try to establish relationships. Give them what I used to say, I'll give you a first-time advertiser rate. So give them a good rate and see if you can build a relationship that way.
Yeah.
Because you may not make a whole lot of money that month on the ad, but if you build a good relationship and you get a good reference, then you go to the next guy and say, here's the performance that we got from this one ad. You can make, what I used to do is I used to put my characters in the advertisements that I would make for them. And then as that performs better for you, that's stuff you can monetize. Like when you have a demand, you can say, well, if you like my characters in the ad, it'll be X amount extra, you know. But then you're in control, you're developing a relationship, and you know, you can learn off of that.
Yeah, I wanted to come back to what you said about Project Wonderful for just a second. It's kind of a tangent, but you said it was incestuous. It's not incestuous if you are publishing their ads on your site and you're getting paid, which I think was the question. If you are trying to advertise through Project Wonderful, you should be prepared that everybody on there is another webcomic.
Yeah, 99.9% of all the ads on Project Wonderful are other webcomics.
Yeah.
So it's just like what used to happen with Keenspot and stuff where everyone just linked to each other, but now everyone's paying for it.
That's true. Right.
Which is fine with me.
But the scale has also increased, you know, exponentially. Not exponentially, but it's increased markedly. Yeah. But one other thing that I want to mention, too, in terms of targeting an audience, and this is Brad-related. Brad does a wonderful, beautiful, gorgeous, long-form strip called Fables, which if you haven't seen it, at phables.com, is a Philadelphia slice-of-life comic. And it's very focused on Philadelphia. One thing that I was going to mention is, because this is rarely seen in comics, because that's so geographically specific, if Brad ever wanted to, he could sell specifically to Philadelphia-focused businesses and outreach things. Not outreach, but you know what I mean. And that's rare in comics when you can focus geographically. So if by chance you have a Seattle-focused comic, you have a San Francisco-focused comic, that's just an opportunity.
That's it. Seattle.
I'll sell to Microsoft.
We have at least 100 people in here that would read that.
Let's make a comic about this
panel. That was just an addendum thought. Let's go on to the next question.
Is that a psychiatrist?
Sorry, we've been waiting kindly.
No problem. Hey, I have a couple questions. I read the exchange between you and the print artists on that whole dialogue.
Yeah. Where we kicked their asses all over the place.
And the following webcomics group that did a guide as well. It seemed to be very circular.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, we don't get how you can do it. For example, this is how you do it. We don't get how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you think they're getting it?
Because they're retarded.
No, you know what it is? A lot of artists, there's the mindset of, I just want to get paid to draw. And I understand that. I very much understand that. I was that way 5-6 years ago, which is why previously I hooked up with United Media and wanted to do comics.com and all that route. Because, you know, as our core being, I'm a liberal arts major. I didn't want to have to learn this and that. And I'm still learning painful business lessons every day. But I literally just wanted to get paid to draw. And I think a lot of those guys and girls, especially after 50 years of doing whatever script they're doing, it's just,
their kids,
there's no way in hell I'm going to change my business or my way of approaching my business, even though your art is your business. So they still just want to collect the checks from the syndicate and let that be done. And so you show them, well, this is the 10 things you have to do, and they go, no. You can just see it psychologically.
Anytime they made a little bit of progress, they went to you, okay, all right, so we're online. Okay, I get that. Now, when I send my strip to the people who are going to handle it for me, then where does
then
the money come from?
See, here's my basic proposition. This is why I was trying to argue so vehemently to express to the cartoonists that I do love and respect. If you accept that the newspaper business model is fundamentally flawed in the sense that the main core content is news and is now a day dated in print, and that any other medium online can offer within minutes, the core business model of a newspaper is failed now. It's no longer the optimal way to distribute information. So newspapers, regardless of their 25-30% profit margins, are going to be gone within 5 to 10 years, for the most part. And like radio, they'll still exist, but they'll probably transpose to more of a magazine-type format. So if you assume that that's going, and if you assume that the traditional 100-year newspaper strip format is going, then you have to assume that your business model is going to move online. And if you assume that, then you have to look at, well, how are people making money? And aside from Wall Street Journal Online, which is a business write-off and which has information nobody else has, nobody's been able to make a workable business model with subscriptions. So you have to assume a freemium business model for the most part. And if you assume that, then you have to follow something along with what we are you know, preaching. And it's not to say that we're the be-all, end-all, and the final word on it.
Yes, we are.
But but what we're saying is, if you assume these three, four things, and granted, they can argue the specifics, but I ignore a lot of that. But if you assume those five or six things, and you have to assume that you're going to be moving to a smaller, more entrepreneurial, more tighter-focused audience where the artist has more business and artistic control and less editorial restriction. And they don't want to accept that, I think, is the core thing.
Listen, and to be nice, and I don't want this to come across the wrong way, it's a different mindset, all right? I'm 10 years senior to a friend of mine that I've known in high school and college, okay? He lives in Austin. He says, come down to Austin, we'll have a good time. For that, for me, who's reaching 40, I think he means, we'll hang out in my apartment, we'll get some beers, we'll watch my Battlestar Galactica DVDs, and we'll catch up on Space 1999. He still
catch
wants...
Catch up on Space 1999.
He's got the DVDs. It's awesome. He is of the mindset that a good time is he's going to go clubbing. Now, for me, I used to love that. But now I'm almost 40. I'm not going to fucking go in a club where I can't hear anyone. There's women with... shoving boobs. I got a wife at home if I want to see boobs. But for him, that's awesome. Nothing he says is going to convince me that I should go out to a club tonight. I've grown too old for that stuff. And so I think when you talk to some of these guys that have been doing it in print for a long time, they've fought their battles, they've slayed their dragons, and they're like, well, you know, our business model is kind of going away. We're not happy about it. We're like, oh, we've got it fixed. All you got to do is go to this club and dance. We're like, oh, God. And it's not like...
Yeah.
I know we kind of portray them as, well, web comics are drawing with fire, and I don't understand. But it's... I think they grok it for the most part, but they're just like, oh, man, guys, I'm too old for that shit. Well, I don't want it. They're like Danny Glover. I'm retiring tomorrow. But, I mean, I'm in my late 30s, and I feel that way about some stuff.
And that's okay to have that mindset for you, but then for them to try to convince other people...
That's where they... Yes.
And that's
that
why...
That the young people should do it that way, then that's when I draw the lines and have to... That's where they get my ire up, because then you've got to... You can accept that for yourself, but you can't force that on other people.
Yeah, and
that's why, as much as I didn't want to, that's why I was arguing with Ted Rall, because it's like, it's bullshit an argument that there are still multimillionaires being made every year in traditional print models. That's just a bullshit
lie. That's not happening.
I know guys that have second and third jobs because they're not making any money.
Yeah. I used to cold call cartoonists. I used to find their numbers.
How did you ever find numbers?
When the net first came online, when people first started putting comics... Fuck you, yes. Kids are like, there was not an internet? Paul McCartney was in a band before Wings?
I just love the idea that, like, Scott's in the next room at DARPANET, like, hey, this is great.
No, but well, the first comics I saw on the...
Tell us your story.
All right, what's your story, old
assholes.
Man? Come on, let's hear it.
The first cartoonists that ventured online were gag cartoonists that were using their web pages as a way to attract magazine clients. Mm-hmm. So they were like electronic calling cards.
Yeah, it was before
you had to worry about don't put your phone number on there. So Randy Glasberg and Bob Stake, all these illustration cartoonists, I cold called them, and I was like, oh, God, I'm sorry. I want to be a cartoonist so bad, and I'm working a day job, and I hate it, and I just wanted to pick your brain. And they were all very friendly, and they're like, no, let's talk. A couple – guy draws Arlo and Janice, a couple of syndicated comic strip guys too. Pat Brady, Stu Rose's Rose. I ended up talking to all of them. And I've talked to them since then. Now, the guy that draws Funky Winkerbean for some reason emails me all the time. And he wants that strip where I made fun of Funky Winkerbean. I'm trying to explain to him there is no original art. I draw with fucking light.
And you know what? To him?
Yeah.
To him, that is like, he's drawing with fire.
Yeah.
I understand.
Listen, I don't have time
don't
to figure this out.
You use some dragon fairy word like Wacom. Is that Tolkien? I don't know what that is.
I tried saying it in my room, but nothing appeared.
Explain it to me one more time. You know, stop. I have some strips about cancer to write. I have to go. Every single one of those print cartoonist told me, you know, listen, even if you do make it in syndication, even if you do make it, just keep your day job for a little bit. It's hard to make money. And it's like all this time from like the beginning all the way till now, everyone's like, yeah, it's tough. You know, it's real hard to make a decent living. Some people strike lightning and you're a Dilbert or you're a you know. And now all of a sudden, Ted Rawls like, everyone's millionaire. We're money. Hey, everybody, money out of my ass. When did that happen? When did that flip over?
And that's why I got so uppity about it. Because I was like, you need to tell the truth to artists and be responsible. And the honest to God truth is, before I quit my day job at Mattel, before I was a cartoonist, my wife and I, who's also an artist, you know, the artistic life is a tricky one. It can be hugely, roller coaster as far as income. So she and I, for the last 6 years before I left Mattel, saved up for 2 years' worth of income so that if we both lose our jobs, both of us can lose our job for 2 years and still make a living. And that's being responsible as an artist. And that's what I was trying to say partially in that thing, is that as artists, we have a responsibility to younger artists to A, say what's working as a business model or as a life, and also what's the most responsible way you can approach that life. So, anyway.
Sorry.
I talked to
him. Let's
push
on. We've got a lot of line. Yeah.
What? Segueing off of the making money question, how would you give suggestions for artists that want to, you know, break from the
period? Well, hold on a second. You already had questions. Sorry. I'll get back to that if we get through these guys. But there's a big line of people standing behind you.
Okay, so I sat down at the drafting table and I looked at a blank piece of paper.
That was your first mistake. No. Sit down, next. What's your question, glasses? How do you make it? You won't. Sit down, next.
So, yeah. I'm curious. Do you have a go-to routine for creative ideas? How do you face that blank piece of paper?
Brad, by the way, is one of the most disciplined idea crafters.
The question was, when you're facing the blank piece of paper, what's your routine to get that idea, your go-to routine?
You know, I think the key word in that is routine, because I really do try to use routine to my advantage. I try to write on Monday and Tuesday and maybe a little bit of Wednesday. By Wednesday, I like to be transitioning to penciling. And I like to be working on finished art by Friday. And obviously that's kind of a rubber thing if I'm having trouble. A lot of times I find myself writing right up until Thursday. And then...
Scott got email.
But here's the key on routine, is that sometimes you can break that routine to jumpstart your mind. And I mean not only in terms of what time you're doing it, but even where you're doing it. I try to write in the same place every day. I go into my den, I shut my door, you know, that's my safe place, you know. And if I'm if I'm brain locked, I can kind of give my brain a spin by, even if you go to another room in the house, you don't even have to leave the house if you don't want to. And my wife always says, why do you tell people this? But I'm gonna share it with you because I believe in it. I really do use my subconscious. I before I fall asleep, if I know I'm going to be writing the next day, I start chanting, and I don't do it out loud because that would lead to divorce. But I'm going to write Evil Ink. I'm going to write, and I try to do that right up until the time I fall asleep. And there you go. My wife is once again going to listen to the podcast and say, "Why do you tell people that?"
She won't be able to hear you.
Well, no, but there's
something up with the ideas, and you just wait for it to come. But when I've been brain locked and I've used that system, when I start getting back into the physical act of writing, the ideas flow.
It's probably better than my system, which is you can't write stars.
Well,
and I want to say this one thing about writer's block. I don't believe in it. Because for me...
It believes in you, Brad.
The times that I found myself, quote-unquote, writer's block, it wasn't that I didn't have ideas. It was that I didn't have the confidence to take one of those ideas and run with it. Ideas are cheap. Everybody's got an idea. It's the execution of an idea that really separates the truly great from the practitioners. If you just give yourself that confidence to take any one of those ideas and run with it with confidence, you're not going to have any problems with writer's block.
It's kind of like that. If you guys, I think it's Henry Ford. Henry Ford had a quote that said, "Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right." Have you guys ever heard that quote?
Yes.
Yeah. And the basic idea there is so true for artists because, let's be honest, we're all kind of introverted. We all probably had moments in our high school years that were tough. We all got a little bit beat up egotistically at some point in our life, or we wouldn't have chosen to be artists. We would have chosen to be, you know, sports stars that then went into a camp.
Why did you bring that up?
We're all getting depressed if you remember prom night, 1985. Or maybe that's just me.
I have a picture of Brad with a mullet and a tux on. Which, one year apart.
I've got that picture with a powder blue tux.
No, but I mean, so Brad's system of writing is, because, you know, as artists, we're all going to, our default position is all going to be to beat ourselves up. You know, I'm the worst, nobody likes me, my work is crap, all that sort of stuff. So to find ideas, there is some truth in that idea of neuro-linguistic programming, which is, I can do it, I will make this happen, I'm the best at this, I'm going to get better, if nothing else. So Brad's system...
As fooey as it sounds,
I think there's probably some truth in it. But Chris is also voluminous in what he produces. I mean,
it's the same basic idea. Is that there's no one idea where I'm like, oh, that's not going to play out, because there's enough that you can suss out some new routine with it. Everybody's what was that quote that there's only like seven types of stories in the whole world,
and I've stolen all of them.
Yeah,
listen, green shirt in the back. Brad's theory is great, but so is communism. Here's how it works. All right? Blank piece of paper. Comics due in 24 hours. Step one, internet surfing. Okay? You've got plenty of time. 24 hours? You're going to be sleeping for eight of them. You've got plenty of time. And you know that you shit gold, so it's only a matter of time. All right, then phone calls. Tons of phone calls. Talk to friends, talk to your wife, find out what's for din-din.
Then Space 1999.
Right, Space 1999 DVD.
Yeah, that's
6 hours right there.
Right, then you sit down to draw. Now it's time to get serious. But wait a minute, you forgot it's Thursday. Lost. Got to find out what happens on the island.
Okay, nothing new. All
right. Right. Then midnight comes. Deadline. You're out of time. There's no way to get it up on time. Don't worry about it. They'll read it tomorrow. Go to sleep. Wake up the next day, you're in the office late because the lady at Starbucks was just so cute. And then you get in, and then you're like, whoa, I'm way late. I should be drawing today's strip, and I haven't even drawn yesterday's. Then the panic sets in. And then it's nothing but the curled up in a fetal position in the corner of the shower going, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough. And then it just comes to you.
Sadly, that is so close to Scott's working model. I love that. You'll get a phone call. I get five different points in a day from Scott. Watching Lost, feeling great. Oh my God, Dave, it's 2 a.m. I got nothing. But, you know, like, the basic idea for idea creation, I think we talked about this on one podcast, and I think the thing that we came up with, where's the guy that asked the question? He's in the back. Thing that we came up with is, like, three good working models for people is either a time-based system, a location-based system, or what was the other one? A people-based system?
Space-based.
I know. Listen, I get too
theoretical. What? I've not heard this.
No, that, like, if you have a space in your house that when you go to, you work, and when you leave, you are done working. Sometimes that works for some people. Or if you say, by God, every night at 8 p.m., I'm going to sit my butt down, I'm going to do a cartoon. That works for some people. It's like, and I think Brad's right. It's a routine, and especially with a daily strip, or even producing long-form comics where you're doing a page a day or a couple pages a day, you've got to have a system, or else you're... Because it's like learning ride a bike, and the system is the bike. You've got to train your brain to consistently come up with
no
ideas.
Idea.
And that's enough of that. Let's go to the next question.
Hey, one real quick. Routine, I was just kidding. I spent some time at the Penny Arcade offices this week, and I watched the guys work. And they have a routine, man, and it made me jealous. Like, I want to go home and set one up. And it was so funny because at one point, Jerry turns to me and goes, now, Mike knows, but you don't. I'm writing my post now, and I don't mean to be mean, but you're very interesting, and you will distract me, so I need you to stay quiet. And I'm like, hey, no problem. I completely understand. So we're all quietly working, and I don't know if he's finished or not. So I kind of get up and stretch and turn around, and it looks like I'm going to start a conversation. And all I do is, from behind the monitor, I see Mike go... And I just went. But that, you know, that's why they get their stuff done, right? Because they stick to it. At my office, it would have been, I know I told you, but let's discuss boobs. But
and
it's,
on that note,
it is a routine.
When you mentioned that community building is an important part of the business model, can you guys give some successful examples of
oh man!
You want to start, Chris?
This is going to be the hardest one because
I think it's easy.
Well, did you have the same answer that I do? My hard answer was going to be make a good strip that people want to discuss. But I think we've had questions from a couple people who are like, "How do I start my forum? How do I launch my community?" And well, how many strips do you have? Well, I have three. Well, nobody's, you've not given people a reason to stick around, you know. And then that's like, why do you make a good strip? I don't know. Done. So you know what? Ignore what I said.
What?
Go move on to Dave.
What?
No,
where
I'm
did community question guy go? Oh, there you are.
Yeah, he's right there.
I don't know names yet, but your guy. Glasses from now on. So anyway, glasses. Community. Treat fans like shit at cons. Just pick something that they're wearing and call them by their name. Glasses.
Now you're
going to have dinner tonight. Glasses.
The George Bush style of nicknaming. There we go.
Hairhead.
I don't think it has to do with forums or Twitter or Facebook or any outlet. I think it has to do with two things. Like Chris said, having content there that draws people in. And then you have to be... And I've seen some people do it successfully the opposite way, but the most obvious is to share a little bit of yourself, right? So you're not just putting the strip up there. You're also writing a blog. You're letting people know what's going on in your life, and then they kind of feel like they're a part of it. There's one of our favorite shows is The Office, and there was an episode that we laugh at all the time where the two guys come and make an inside joke, and Michael Scott goes, ha, 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 you know, to get in on with them. And they go, oh, sorry, it was an inside joke. He goes, I love inside jokes. Hope to be a part of one someday. And you laugh at that because everybody's felt that way. Everybody wants to be a part of a group. Everybody wants to be a part of an inside joke. So, you know, your strip, your content, is the inside joke that all of your readers get to be in with on you and all the other readers. But you have to share a part of yourself, too.
Yeah, that's true.
And, there's, you know, depending on how you feel about that and how comfortable you are with it, you know, depends on how much you want to share and how much of real you want to put out there.
I think the blog is really important in community building, and I always suggest that it appear directly underneath the strip. That is where you're giving your subtext to your readers. And I always tell people, and I'm not saying it because he's here, but watch what Dave Kellett puts in his blog and watch how he puts it in his blog. And you'll really see how somebody really knows how to communicate with his readers. Dave does a wonderful job not only putting out really interesting posts in his blog, but posts that he knows his readers are going to be interested in, and he kind of presents a little bit of himself in doing so to the extent that when somebody does come up and introduces themselves at a convention, they already feel like they know him. They already kind of feel as if, like greeting an old friend at a reunion, or when he launches a book and he says, "Okay, this is a book that that readership comes up and immediately is ready to support him because he's personal with them."
But you've talked a lot about what parts of yourself to share on that blog, and not the parts where like, God, I'm down my
luck. Nobody suspects the inner demons.
I think Scott and I are probably the biggest. Not disagreeers, but just in terms of different modus operandi in terms of revealing of ourselves.
Yeah.
Because you're much more revealing.
Oh, I'm too much. I go too far.
Yeah, you go too far, and I probably go a little too little.
Like, you'll have a genuine reason to say something. Like, someone could be a real jerk to you, and you are well within your rights to go up to them and say, hey, come on. And you won't. Meanwhile, I'm coming up to you saying stuff I have no business saying, like, what's up? My balls itch. and then, but you share nothing, even when you should. Sometimes,
yeah. Well, that's just
that's why
probably,
I hate you.
Listen, I think for me, my core operating idea in interacting with the world, as far as the business around my comic strip, is that you cannot err if you are kind. Kindness will get you far in the artistic business world, because. So what does that mean in terms of practical use? It means in the blog, you're giving people things of interest that are of a similar mind frame to the strip itself, which is what drew them there originally. You're giving them enough of yourself, whether it be Scott's level or my level, such that you're bringing them closer to the artist that creates the work that they love. You're answering emails, which I think is a huge thing that artists often don't do. You're not Picasso. Answer their email. You know, if someone's reaching out to you, that's a customer that you've earned. And, you know, they always say in marketing that, you know, it's much more expensive to buy a new customer than it is to keep the one you already have. You have a customer emailing you. They will buy a book if you just show them a little bit of kindness and email them back. And it doesn't have to be, you know, War and Peace in terms of typing back to them. You can say, thank you so much. That meant a lot to me. And people understand that you're getting, you know, hundreds of, in Scott's case, thousands of emails. So all those little incremental things, if you express kindness in your blog, if you express kindness in your hundreds of emails, dozens of con appearances around the country, it comes back to,
it's not just the golden rule. It's very good business. And it's also affirming as an artist to put kindness out there in the world, because it comes back to you in myriad ways that are that we can talk about in terms of monetarily and just in terms of the satisfaction of life, the gifts that readers give you.
They take care of you.
Yeah, they take
care of you. They will take care of you.
I mean, Ryan, who was it, Ryan Somers saying that if you take care of them, they'll take care of you. Ryan, who does a strip called Least I Could Do. And that's my operating philosophy, is to give out kindness. And as far as how much of you, you're, did I cut you off?
No, I was going to cut you off and stop. That's just like the podcast. I was like, why was I about to talk?
I don't know. But so regardless of how much you're willing to put out in the world, as far as your inner self, you can make it a personal blog. But even if it's just value added, interesting links, similar themes, you know, blog points, that sort of thing. But then kindness in your emails, kindness in your personal appearances. Because let's be honest, I've met a lot of cartoonists and comic artists that I really respected, and they were jerks in real life, and or so introverted that it was really awkward and made me feel off put, you know. So if you're kind and you're warm and you're genuine in your emails and in your personal appearances and in your blog posts, that has a quantitative effect on the business aspect of your business.
And mold your community to the one that you want. Okay?
Yeah.
Reward with a response the people that act the way that you want your community to act, and ignore the people that are acting the way you don't want them to act.
Well, right. Okay, but guys, what about those of us who are cold and dead on the inside? How do I generate that honesty to
next
make money?
Question.
I had a long time first time.
Love that long time first time.
So I work for a rather large company that has to build advertising network systems that you guys would use to throw ads in your face.
Wow.
I'm personally curious, what kind of ECPM do you guys get?
What kind of what?
ECPM.
ECPM?
Estimated
cost. Oh.
I don't even know.
Well, I mean, it depends on the ad system.
I'll be the most honest about it here. I know I'm leaving money on the table as far as my advertising. I pay the least amount of attention business-wise to my advertising. So I'll let these three guys talk about
it. Oh, I'm not saying that's my information. I'm not telling you that. How much do I get? Like, what's my CPM advertising?
Yeah, your average.
Email my ad guy. He'll send you a media kit if you're serious. I mean, it's different per, right? Like, what do we charge?
Depending on
for,
who it is.
Yeah, like, I mean, the stuff I get for Google, they tell me what I get. I don't have any control over that. But, like, if we're doing ads for a client where we're making blog posts and we're giving artwork, you know, it's different for different things. The latchkey stuff kind of goes with the market.
I don't even know
if
I know the number, you know?
Like, sometimes Google's, like, 24 cents, sometimes it's 16 cents, sometimes it's 6 cents. You never know.
Yeah.
6 cents.
Well, and the reason why
he was a ghost the whole time.
The reason why I said I don't even know is because for me, my business model, only 10% of my income, my gross income, is from advertising. So I give it that much of my mind share. So I don't even really pay attention all that much to the numbers. As my business grows, I know I should and probably will end up paying more attention to it. But I'm being honest and saying I'm naive to my own numbers as far as advertising, because it only makes up 10% of my business. So I assume that you guys were a bigger chunk, but maybe you're not.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know that there's really a way to predict it is the problem.
But I mean, I know for a fact that there are other webcomics whose their business model is much more reliant on advertising. Because it's harder for them to merchandise or monetize through physical things with their webcomic. So it varies from comic to comic, but it's a totally valid question. I'm being honest.
I couldn't tell you.
I actually stopped using AdSense just because the payout was so bad.
Yeah.
It just dropped off.
Every time I say I'm taking it down, then the next month it's a great month, and I'm like, oh, it's back. Google is back. And then the next month it's like,
yeah. All right, so next question.
I think it was in today's chapter of the book, or one of the chapters, where you recommend against buying single ISP. And there's also kind of a recommendation from Google.com, which does offer single ISP.
Single what?
ISBN, international standard book numbers in ISBN.
ISBN numbers
on the back of the book. So your question is: do we recommend buying one? Well, that actually is one of those differences of opinion that Brad and I had in the book. I think I recommended buying multiple ISBNs because I think you only can buy multiple ISBNs from Bookland. Who
Man,
sells?
You better not be able to buy single, because I ended up buying 10.
Yeah, buy single?
But buy 10. You're gonna use them up with Starslip Books. I bought 10 and I have like 3 left. So you're gonna use them over the course of your career, and it's like $200 to buy 10, I think. But I recommended buying 10 because I'm very firm in the thought that for a small to medium sized webcomic, you can't make a living using Cafe Press Cafe Press and
Lulu
and the sort of third party essentially print on demand.
Did you buy an ISBN for your
I'm a strong believer that as a small to mid sized webcomic you have to self publish.
Did you just buy one or did you buy 10?
The margins to make a living.
Shit.
So that's why I recommended owning a lot of ISBNs. Brad had used Lulu. I'm going to bring you into
We're having a side discussion. Yeah.
Did you get 1 or 10 ISBNs?
I bought 10, and I think I spent like $250.
Yeah.
Bowker. Unless I misunderstood where I read, there's only one place you really can buy ISBNs, and that's from Bowker. If you're buying them from a second party, you may be inviting trouble down the line because I don't think you're officially the publisher at that
Your name
point.
May
yeah,
not
you're,
be
yeah, you're under a Lulu ISBN.
Right. Now, Lulu... I like Lulu for a intermediate step. If you don't feel you're quite ready to start self-publishing, if you don't have $5,000 to put into a print run and space in your basement to store the books or a warehouse, I like Lulu as that middle step to bring you to that point. And that's exactly how I've used it. I used Lulu for the last, I think, 3 years. It was very good for what I needed it to be. But then when I started distributing through Diamond, I found out very quickly that I couldn't bring the unit cost down far enough to actually make a profit when they started distributing it. So then I went to, as of the last couple of months, went to actual, God honest, for real self-publishing. But Lulu brought me to that second step. And so I do have good things to say about them for that. I just don't think you can... continue it indefinitely. As you grow, I think you graduate.
I've never bought one. Image always buys them for me.
Well, yeah, Scott's very different.
In Canada, you get them for free.
Yeah.
The government gives them to you.
Really?
Yes.
So get health care in Canada.
We asked Ryan, we said, hey, where do you buy your ISBNs? And he goes, the Canadian government gives it to me for free. And we were like, what?
Yeah, but the government also subsidizes film and they subsidize, so as artists, you can do far better. Move to Europe if you want subsidized artistic lifestyle. Come on. Does that fairly answer your question?
Move to Europe.
So move to Europe was our
plan. Yeah, that's exactly.
Quick follow-up to Scott. What do you think Kate Hackett's pressure
and what am I going to... ask Jesus whenever he allows my chin to sprout hair.
It's time, sir.
It's time.
Yeah. Thanks, asshole. One last question. Scott, when are your balls dropping? When are you going to lose some weight? When are you going to run a little more? When are you going to stop being such a...
That's high school.
I'm very touchy about my lack of facial hair. Look at my flowing black hair. Look at all this. That's why.
Man, you hit on a point there. All right, so next question.
First, walk away. Secondly, those of us who come from mainly a fine arts or illustration background feel like they have a really great idea, they want to jump on that, but don't necessarily have the technological background. What's advice or resources would you recommend for learning how to just learn the basics of building a website and sites?
The chapter I wrote in the book, unfortunately, that sounds like a pitch, but I mean, it's hard. There's a lot of free services, and it's gotten much, much, much easier. It's nowhere near as difficult. I think anybody could do it at this point. There's still this sense that it's daunting, but I don't think it is anymore.
I mean, you can download WordPress and install it in 5 minutes, and then you can download Comic Press, which is a plugin that Tyler Martin wrote that specifically handles archives and blogs.
My host will install WordPress for you. You just say, I want it, and they put it on.
With Comic Press and WordPress, for what you would want in the first weeks and months of what you're working on anyway, that's everything you need. You don't need any. When you say you don't need anything trickier than that.
No. Oh my God, I wish they had that when
it's
I started.
It's
amazing. So, and then there's also, if you want to get trickier, there's still free software from Keenspot has that. But I mean, actually, Chris's book is great. Chris's chapter in the book is great in terms of laying out.
It's very simple now.
Like, I mean, I wouldn't recommend necessarily like doing one of those where they host it. Like, you go to Blogspot and sign up for that. You want as much control as you can get.
One bit of advice that I would give you is. Avoid company involvement, third-party company involvement, as much as you can.
In general, every
artist assumes that, this idea won't amount to anything. I'll sign it up with Drunk Duck or Platinum Comics or this or that. And the thing is, you never know which idea is going to hit, so why not own it the whole way through? And we're probably more entrepreneurial than your average artist anyway, but the idea, for me anyway, is that own as much as you can of your own work. Don't get other companies involved, because for the most part, they're just IP farms that are putting up trumped up because they want to eventually own a percentage of something that you create and sell it on to a larger media, whether it be film or video games. So own everything that you work, that you create.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a lot easier now. Like, I remember I taught myself HTML back when that's all you needed to make a website. And I actually taught it to myself. I hand-coded it.
Oof.
Yeah, and then I went to get a job one time, and they're like, oh, 0 minutes? All right. He's like, the all-seeing eye of Kilrog says panel group. I remember going in, they're like, what do you use, front page? I'm like, I don't know what I use. I just type it in. They go, you can hard code? Oh, my God. And they hired me.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I like how hard code sounds so like Mission Impossible.
I know.
You can hard code?
It's like Jurassic Park when the kids look at the blocks. It's like, oh, this is Unix. I know this.
So if there's not any final questions, anybody last raising hands? Any thought upon a thought?
One last thing.
One last
quick, 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 quick. We're out of time.
Vader was framed. There
so
we go.
So many people think archival on that site. And I have a question, kind of a traditional art question. How much have you worried about kind of the big name publishers coming at you for using names somewhat similar, like, you know, in some cases? There are specific, you know, that's the joke.
As long as it's fair use and parody, and you can find all that online, it's not a big deal. There are some people, some companies, that even if you're being polite, like if I were, like some companies are like, even if you're like, Coke is awesome, they'll say, take it down.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't want to risk association in case one day you go, you know, Coke is awesome. Also, I hate anyone who's not white. And then they are associated with you, right? So you got to be somewhat careful, but I think a lot of the times we're small enough fish that they don't even
you've never really worried about that, Brad. I mean,
not a whole lot. There's actually one case where they actually could come and tag me, and that is where my idea is that if you don't use them as a recurring character with a lot of speech balloons, then you're okay. I've only done that once. And that was like in a long time ago. Now, more often, if you see an actual character, he's in the background walking through, he's not having a speaking role, he's just kind of there. It's a one-shot cameo, and they're off stage. So that's pretty
it's not like guests.
It's almost.
Yeah.
If I brought Iron Man in and made him the subject of a storyline, and he came through saying what Iron Man thinks about this and that for a week, then I think I'd get in trouble.
And on Brad's note, though, all of those, if any one of those are a problem, if an IP attorney were to attack,
out of a closet.
If an IP attorney was to contact Brad, he could take down any individual one of those slip-ups, say, and it would be no big deal to Brad's artistic or business model. But I think one thing we should warn you against is if your core comic or business is built around someone else's IP, that's a fundamental problem.
Yeah. For example, Final Fantasy sprites.
Yeah, but
Mega Man sprites.
He'll never be able to do anything with it.
How does he do that?
He's up against two major corporations.
I think the game is so old that it doesn't matter.
Neither one of those IP attorney groups are going to be like, fine. Go ahead and sell those t-shirts, you know. So, or Alien Love Spreader, sorry, I always get that wrong.
Yeah.
As long as it's, and always remember, as long as it's not for commercial use, we're not making any money. It doesn't matter. I mean, look at the Red versus Blue guys. Now they work for Microsoft.
But that could have, you know, that very well could have netted out differently. Differently.
Yeah, they could have been.
So it's worth being concerned. I mean, you know.
I've heard horror stories throughout the years of, this title was too close. And so.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could also depend on what venue.